From NPR Music, this is Hot Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito is clearly the song of the summer. It has broken all kinds of sales and streaming records, and music fans have been singing that catchy chorus all summer long all over the world. So this week we take a step back and look at the unprecedented success of Despacito. And to help, this week we welcome back Alt Latino producer and NPR Croc Fellow, Jessica Diaz-Hurtado. Jessica, welcome back.
Thank you. So the numbers behind this song by Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee are staggering. It's been at the top of the Hot Latin charts for 6 months. It's been the number one song on Billboard's Hot 100 for the last 16 weeks. The streaming service Spotify just last week closed out the summer by reporting that Despacito and a remix featuring Justin Bieber were their most streamed tracks in the U.S. and around the world, with 786 million streams since June.
And YouTube has pretty much replaced Top 40 Radio as a source for new music. And as we record this, the number of YouTube views of both the original and the remix is over 4 billion views. That's billion. In fact, the original version of Despacito is now the most viewed video on YouTube ever, with 3 billion of those views.
So, to get behind the unprecedented success of Despacito, we wanted to talk to as many people as possible about this multi-layered pop culture moment. I had a conversation with Luis Fonsi, recorded a while back, just as the song was transitioning from hit song to musical phenomenon.
We also talked to a sociologist who explores the meaning of the song in today's politically charged atmosphere.
We spoke to a music and culture journalist who thinks the success of the Justin Bieber remix is, well, she says it's complicated.
And we talked to a music business executive who says that the industry was caught by surprise by the success and that the song has become so popular, he calls it a social event.
We gathered so many views and perspectives that we needed someone to help us sort it all out. So we talked to the head of all things Latin at Billboard for some perspective.
All of that is coming up on this special edition of Alt Latino.
As they say in another public radio show, first, let's do the numbers. Despacito is only the third Spanish language song to hit the number one spot on Billboard's Hot 100 chart, ever. And it will close out the summer as the Spanish language song that has stayed the longest at that number one spot. The last time a song in Spanish hit number one was in 1996, when everyone was singing and dancing La Macarena. And before that, in 1987, it was everyone's favorite son jarocho, La Bamba. Now, those precedents were based on record sales. Do you remember those records?
I do, in fact, remember those. But nowadays, it's all about streaming, and that is where this song is crushing all precedent. But it's important to note that there are, in fact, two versions of the song, as we mentioned, and that is contributing to all this worldwide success. The original was recorded by pop crooner Luis Fonsi, who teamed up with reggaeton star Daddy Yankee, both of whom have Puerto Rican roots. That was released in January of this year, and it quickly started racking up streaming and YouTube views.
And a quick reminder, streaming and YouTube are how musicians make most of their money these days.
Okay, then in April, a remix featuring Canadian singer Justin Bieber was released. He added an English verse and learned to sing one in Spanish. And that's when things really started to take off and it became a crossover juggernaut.
Yeah, but was it Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee crossing over to the general market? Or did Justin Bieber cross over into the Spanish language market? I asked Luis Fonsi about it back in July.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. As you say, it does bring up just a very important conversation, because when we talk about crossing over, or at least the way I understood that term, it was always the Latino artist sort of crossing over into the general market, having to do things in English, you know, in order to get played in general market radio or in, even in, you know, in European markets. The way that Despacito happened was sort of organically. It was never written as a crossover record. This was just about as Latino as it gets. You know, it's a mix between what I've always done, which is sort of the more pop side, you know, mixed with the Latin urban. It was obviously a collaboration with Daddy Yankee, and that's how we released the song, and that's how the song became number one in many, many, many countries for the first couple of months, until Justin Bieber did, you know, the remix. You know, that brought it up sort of into a different light. It gave it a different sound, but it's still a Spanish song. I mean, obviously he did the very first verse in English, which I thought came out great, but he decided to sing the chorus or half of the chorus in Spanish. So it's not really like we're completely changing the song. We just added this amazing voice and this new layer, but it's still a mainly Spanish song. So I'm just, that's what I guess at the end of the day makes me so happy, that the whole world is singing in Spanish. And we had a full-on English lyric for this song, but we didn't need it. You know what I mean? It just worked in Spanish, and people just loved the way it sounded, and they just wanted to learn it. And that wasn't planned. That was just, it just happened.
And as far as it being the number one song in the United States, where right now, like politically, there is an anti-immigrant sentiment, a lot of politics around that. What do you think it means for a Spanish language song to be number one here?
Yeah, the timing is quite is quite perfect, you know, and sort of this environment that we live in. And I don't want to turn this song into a political environment, because it's not. It's just it's a great song to just make us feel good. But in the times that we live, that, you know, some people want to divide and we want to build walls, and you know, we're going through sort of a lot of change. It's quite lovely that a Spanish song is number one right now. You know, that's what music is all about. It's about coming together. It's about, you know, uniting cultures. And that's why I love what I do so much.
So we're wondering what you're going to do next, now that you have this song. It's number one in the whole entire world. Are you like just gonna retire? Are you gonna keep on going?
This is the first single of an amazing album that's already recorded, you know, and that it's just full of surprises. So this is just only the beginning. I'm very excited of the next steps that we're gonna take. I'm already collaborating with amazing artists. I was literally in the studio yesterday, right before my show in Lisbon yesterday. I went to the studio for 4 hours to record on this amazing song that I'm doing with some really cool artists that I'm not allowed to say yet, because it's not fully finished and done. And the fact that the song is number one doesn't mean that it all stops here, or that I feel as though I have to top this. You know, this is amazing. I'm blessed. But Despacito is Despacito. You know, now I have to give the people, you know, something else.
Okay, up next, Petra Rivera Rideau is an assistant professor of American Studies at Wellesley College.
She is also author of Remixing Reggaeton, The Cultural Politics of Race in Puerto Rico. And she describes the tension within what Luis Fonsi hopes the songs will do and today's strong anti-immigrant climate.
I think there's a lot of different ways to view this. Luis Fonsi, in many of his interviews, is viewing this as very positive, as something that's breaking down barriers between people in this very hostile climate. And I feel a little bit more skeptical about it. There's this contradiction of Latin culture, right, or Latino-based cultural practices being popular at the same time that there's a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment and a lot of anti-Latino sentiment dominating a lot of our political rhetoric. To me, isn't a very new contradiction. It's something that we've seen over and over again, right? So like Cinco de Mayo, for example, we could think about the ways that that's been really commodified and has become almost like a holiday in the United States for some people, right? But at the same time that they're celebrating it, they're doing it through reiterating a lot of these stereotypes about, you know, drinking tequila and wearing sombreros and all of these things that continue to objectify Latinos, and in that case, particularly Mexican culture. So I think we see this again in a little bit with Despacito, right? So if you look at a lot of the media coverage of Despacito, there's a lot of emphasis on sexuality, on party, on happiness, and sensuality. And not that those things are bad, right? There is a place for fun and there is a place for parties and there is a place for expressing one's sexuality. But the sort of success of this song has been reduced, I think, in a lot of media coverage to these sort of stereotypes. And so what that does is, again, it reproduces this kind of othering of Latinx people that is consistent with the anti-immigrant, anti-Latino rhetoric, right? Because the kinds of ideas around sexuality and things like that have historically been seen as very threatening. So I think you could say that it is breaking down some barriers. It's probably exposing some people to reggaeton that they maybe didn't know about before. It may be inspiring some people to think about Spanish, to like investigate the lyrics and stuff like that. But at the same time, it is being sort of represented through all of these kinds of stereotypes that are old.
Okay, now let's talk about Justin Bieber, okay?
Okay.
Now, some call his participation a form of brownface, while others, including Luis Fonsi, defended his participation, you know, as a legitimate expression of the influence of Latino culture and language on society as a whole. So where do you sit? Is he just slumming or was he actually honoring?
I think what makes this complicated is his subsequent actions, right? When that video came out on TMZ of him saying, you know, I don't know the word, so I say Dorito, that kind of stuff. And then again, later on, he did a concert, and I can't remember where it was, but where he said, I can't sing Despacito because I don't even know it, and somebody threw a bottle at him, and that video circulated on the internet. Those things, I think, make this question a little bit more complicated, right? Because particularly for me, the one where he replaces the lyrics with, like, Dorito and burrito and stuff like that, that's particularly problematic in that it employs what, you know, some scholars call mock Spanish. So this is a type of Spanish that people say, like, hasta la vista, baby, which is probably a really dated expression at this point. But it's sort of like these Spanish phrases that are used to indicate some kind of like coolness and downness with this culture. But they're very also sort of fake and objectifying in the same way that I talked about before. It is an interesting thing that, you know, this is a huge hit for him too, and he hasn't taken the time to memorize the lyrics. And sure, it could be fast, right? I've heard Luis Fonsi say, well, you know, this is a really fast song. I speak Spanish and it's really fast for me to sing it. But to me, that's not, you know, if you're going to have a number one hit, you should know the lyrics, right? So to me, that's not a great excuse. You know, he doesn't need to be fluent in Spanish, but he could at least learn the chorus. I don't know if I would call it brown face necessarily. His relationship to this is kind of complicated, and he has sort of reproduced a lot of really problematic things. So I certainly don't feel as upbeat and happy about it as Luis Fonsi. I think I err more towards the brown face thing, I think, on that sort of spectrum of criticism. Just because I feel like, you know, if he knew the lyrics, which I think is just a very basic thing, that would be, you know, that would be good, right? So
you keep saying complicated. You know, to me, it's fascinating that something that is so, that is taken off, yeah, and is so popular and on the surface could just be, you know, a very, very popular, incredibly popular song of the summer is so complicated.
I love that, right? I feel like, you know, I'm a scholar of popular music. I use a lot of popular culture in my courses. And what I try to impart to my students is that popular culture is actually significant, right? It's something that shapes how people understand the world, right? People select the kinds of music they listen to because it says, you know, it speaks to some aspect of their life, right? Whether lyrically, emotionally, you know, because they like to dance to it, whatever, right? It also reflects and helps constitute and create some of our understandings about race, about gender, about sexuality, about all these sort of social identities. And so I think it is actually significant, right? And so a lot of people dismiss pop culture as something that like just reflects all these things that are happening around it, or something that's sort of, we should poo-poo on it because it's not, you know, exclusive or whatever. But I think it's very important. I try to get my students to look at the world around them in a way that gets them to think about how everything is complicated, right? Like most of life lives in the gray, and these things are really significant, right? So I think about too, like, we could think about that with Despacito in a more positive way. Like, for some people, this is the first time they're hearing a Spanish song. And that seems crazy to me, right, as someone who grew up in a place where all we listened to was Spanish music, right? But for some people, this is really exposing them to something very new. And I think that whether or not that's going to translate into, like, real social change, I feel like that's a different question. So I think everything is complicated, but, you know, I guess that's my job.
That's right? Your job.
Come and move that in my direction. So thankful for that. It's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are my sunrise on the darkest day. Got me feeling some kind of way. Make me wanna savor every moment. Slowly, slowly. You fit me, telling me love how you put it on. Got the only key, know how to turn it on. The way you nibble on my ear, the only words I wanna hear. Baby, take it slow so we can last long. Tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso. Oh yeah, ya me está gustando más de lo normal.
You're listening to a special edition of Alt Latino. This week, a deeper dive into Despacito.
Despacito.
Okay, next up, a look at some of the controversy around the video that went viral of Justin Bieber singing replacement words instead of the song's lyrics at what seems to be a bar, not during one of his official onstage performances. We talked about this with Isabella Herrera, the music editor at the influential music and culture website Remezcla.com, which is based in New York.
You can say whatever you want about whether he was drunk or what his intentions were. Obviously, I think to me the more interesting thing is, like, talking about how this has mushroomed into this larger conversation about responsibility. I think many of us didn't expect him to sing the lyrics perfectly. I don't think Justin Bieber is going to be fluent in Spanish in literally 2 weeks. Though I do want to point out that a lot of other pop stars who've recorded Spanish language versions of their songs, like Beyonce and even NSYNC, have learned the Spanish lyrics and performed them live before. To me, it's more about, like, as we said in the article, the level of disrespect that he did it with. I don't care if he messes up the lyric by accident. I don't care if he trips up, says a syllable wrong. It's more about, like, using these tropes and, like, mocking the language itself. I think it, like, hits really hard for people because it, like, shows how much power he has to be able to, like, capitalize on this quote-unquote Latin moment without actually, like, experiencing any of the violence that comes along with speaking Spanish in public, of, you know, even experiencing what it is like to be a second-class citizen in the United States.
Okay, Isabella, talk to us about collaborations in general between Latino artists and everyone else.
I guess for me, I would love to see more Latino artists getting shine in the mainstream. I think the Latin music market has been so segmented for so long, and it's really, people are really missing out on this whole vibrant music culture and so many movements that aren't really given a lot of shine in the mainstream world, at least in the US. So I would love to see more collaborations, as long as they're done in a respectful and genuine way. You know, I think as long as they're done out of artistry and not necessarily in, like, a marketing scheme.
And now the music business take on this. Here's Jesus Lopez. He's president and CEO of Universal Music Latin Entertainment in Miami, the label that released Despacito.
I think it's a more than a success song. I think it's a social event. And I think it would be very difficult to achieve again this kind of successful, because it's not common. I think it's an exceptional thing. Of course, it's opened the space for the another Spanish songs, but I think to repeat this kind of thing is a little bit difficult.
What do you think has changed in the past, like, let's say, 10, 15 years? How has the Latin music market changed? You've been in the business for a very, very long time. And so how have you seen the growth of it and the impact of more Latinos in the U.S. and this kind of crossover culture?
Well, the difference is this is the era of the streaming era, and it's completely different than the previous ones, because streaming make more democratic dramatic the consuming of the population. The most important thing in my point of view is that in this current environment, you can see how the consumers in the Latin America countries, especially in Mexico and Brazil, are using Spotify and YouTube. Before, you cannot see how the market was working there because the piracy. Now you can see on the consumption of the music on the charts in Spotify and YouTube. I think with the streaming, the focus in the Latin music is more notorious that was 10 years ago with Shakira did the crossover, or with Ricky Martin, or Enrique Iglesias did, or La Macarena did 21 years ago, for example.
After the success of Despacito, has it kind of motivated to do more collaborations, or were the collaborations always there, or what is the environment right now?
Right now, everybody knocks our doors to make more collaborations with the Latin artists. Of course, the Anglo producers, the Anglo artists open their eyes and see how big and how important became the Latino artists, and in this moment you can see more demand for this community to make some collaborations with Latino artists.
Si te pido un beso, ven dámelo. Yo sé que estás pensándolo. Llevo tiempo intentándolo. Mami, estoy dando y dándolo. Sabe que tu corazón conmigo te hace bam bam. Sabe que esa beba está buscando de mi bam bam. Me prueba de mi boca para ver. Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas, pero para montarlo aquí tengo la pieza, oye.
In that last answer, Jesús López mentioned Spotify. I spoke offline to Rocío Guerrero, head of Latin culture and programming there, and she says that they've been trying to put Latin music at the forefront for a while now, because streaming helps raise the profile of Latin artists.
Okay, so we have numbers, we have social impact, we have an artist about to come to grips with the scale of this success. What does it all mean? We called Leila Cobo, Executive Director of Latin Content and Programming at Billboard Magazine, to help us figure it out.
This song seems to have almost like magic powers on just about every chart that is trackable. Have you seen anything like this before?
Not in recent years, I haven't. And I think it's the product of many things, but a big factor is streaming, because now we have streaming all over the world, and you have streaming charts that are global, like the YouTube charts and the Spotify charts. And so these songs that do well because there's a big contingency of Latin listeners and non-Latin listeners, I should say, that are streaming them. And it's exciting because it shows that there's an appetite for Latin music that's global.
It almost seems like it was a perfect storm of a good song, social media, and the dance floor that sort of made this thing blow up.
It's an amazing story, isn't it? Because you have a song that's great. It's really catchy. It fuses the two things that are happening in Latin music, which is reggaeton with, you know, kind of this pop balladry, but it has just the right fusion that gets people dancing. And then it starts to do really well. It has Daddy Yankee in the mix, I should say. And Daddy Yankee is a big global hit maker. Daddy Yankee has had big hits around the world, like Gasolina was a humongous hit. And then Justin Bieber listens to the track, loves it, and jumps on it. And it's like the final punt into the goal, so to speak.
And another thing that we talked about recently, you and I, that some people have criticized Justin Bieber for jumping on a bandwagon, or even maybe even brown-facing, quote-unquote, just to tap into the Latino market. What are your thoughts on that? And are these kind of collaborations good for Latin music in general?
These kinds of collaborations between non-Latin artists and Latin artists have existed forever. And it really amazes me that people would be critical of them. Music is a universal language, and the thought that you can silo it off and exclude people is, I think, is terrible. That's just not what music is about. And I say this as a musician, by the way, so I know where I speak of. And Justin Bieber getting on a track and saying, I want to be part of this track, and I am willing to do it in Spanish, I think that takes a lot of guts, especially when you're Justin Bieber and everybody follows every move you make. I spoke with Luis Fonsi, with Daddy Yankee, and with the producers of the track, and I haven't heard one person among the people that created this track say that they think this was a bad thing. On the contrary, Justin Bieber took the time to get a diction coach. He practiced. He recorded this in a studio in Colombia, South America, and he tried to do it right, and I think he did. Now is the expectation that because he sings in Spanish phonetically in a song, he's supposed to go and speak fluent Spanish? That's crazy. So, I mean, and a lot of Latin acts, by the way, have sung in English as well. This goes both ways, and American acts sing in French and vice versa. Like, this is a big collaboration. Music is about collaboration. It's not about saying this is mine and that's yours.
And as far as the music business, what kind of impact do you think will this song have on this business of making Latin pop going forward? Like, do you think that more record companies will now take a chance on releasing music to the general public that maybe we're used to hearing everywhere, from like beauty salons to restaurants to even grocery stores?
I think we're starting to see a lot more collaborations. These are movements that have happened, you know, through the years. Latin music suddenly becomes really hot, and then it ebbs and flows, right? But right now we're in a big high, and there's a lot of excitement and a lot of interest and a lot of collaborations going on right now. You know, Cardi B has a song right now with Messiah. We have, of course, Mi Gente, which, talking about collaborations, is J Balvin, who's Colombian, with Willie William, who is a French DJ. So, yes, and that song is doing extremely well. I think we're going to see more and more of that. CNCO, which is a Latin boy group, just recorded with an Australian girl group. So, yes, we are going to see a lot of this. I think the world is becoming a smaller place, and musically, that's really exciting.
And how big do you think this can get? Like, we've already seen this grow to the trillions in terms of YouTube views. Can it go beyond that?
I think it's going to keep growing in the streaming realm. Because as Latin America gets more and more smartphones, there's still growth in Latin America for smartphones. So we haven't seen the full realization of what streaming platforms can do. And also, this music does very well in other markets that are not Latin. It does really well in China. It does really well in India. It does really well in the Middle East. It's music you can dance to. So that's kind of a universal language in itself.
Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído. Para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo.
You know, it occurs to me that there is the possibility of overthinking all of this, but I think it's important to take a step back and connect all the dots. Because even though it's not something that I would have normally paid attention to in terms of pop music, it does have ramifications beyond the music world.
It does. I mean, we hear it everywhere in the restaurants, grocery stores, on the street. But it's more than a song now. It has evolved more than a song. I feel like it's now become an opportunity for other artists to shine, specifically Latin artists to shine, like we were talking about earlier with Jesus Lopez. I feel like it's an opportunity for global artists to collaborate and create conversations now on a very pop cultural level on what music means and what that conversation looks like with society.
I keep going back to what Layla said, and you know, I'm old enough to remember when Santana was a hit in the 70s, and then in the 80s it was Gloria Estefan and Miami Sound Machine, and then after that it was Ricky Martin and Shakira. You know, there are all these occasional bumps when Latin music makes its way over into the mainstream, quote unquote. And I think that it's not always going to be consistent. There's not always going to be a consistent presence there, but I think it's enough to come and go, so that we're reminded of just how powerful the impact is of Latin music in general.
And there's also like a sense of pride specifically because of the political climate we find ourselves in. And it's hard because there is this sense of pride sometimes, but then also what Isabella was saying is just like, this isn't going to, the song might not change the political situation, but it might open up people's ears to new sounds, new languages at this point.
All from just a song.
Exactly.
Crazy. Thank you all for listening and joining us on this Despacito deeper dive this week on Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Thank you to Jessica Diaz-Hurtado for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me.
Want to remind you that you can... Oh, you can't hear all the songs on our website because there's just one song. Okay. So then stay in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Thank you for listening.
I'm Jessica Diaz-Hurtado. Ciao.
Despacito.